Captain's Log, Stardate 4385.3. The Apocalypse Video Trekcast returns, and it's with a sense of pride and awe when I say that we have finally, after covering 6 episodes of the original series, have finally encountered our first God Being episode. I've instructed my crew to keep their cool during the Old West group mindfuckery and to remember the words of Nancy from A Nightmare on Elm Street. It's not real! You're not real! None of this is real! That said, I've issued each crew member in the landing party a handgun. While it may be considered primitive compared to a phaser, at close range, it could be just as deadly.
Shall be punished. You, Captain Kirk, yours shall be the pattern of your death.
I'm not Ike Clanton.
Well, I'm glad to meet you, Mr. Kirk.
You've got until 5 tonight to get your horse-stealing, scurvy crew out of town.
The Earps will kill the Clantons at the OK Corral at 5 o'clock.
We are the Clantons.
At 1 minute past 5, you'll find a hole in your head right from this gun.
Billy!
We're not gonna move from this spot.
They're shadows, illusions, nothing but ghosts.
Hello, and welcome to another installment of the Apocalypse Video Trekcast. We'd like to thank you for changing the channel during the month of February to listen to some sci-fi adventures with my old chums. I'm your host and Captain Dave. I'm joined again by First Officer Jackie.
Mr. Chekhov is involved, Captain.
And Lieutenant Michael.
Are we the Clantons?
I cannot believe that it took us this long. So this is, I think, our 6th episode of TOS that we've covered, I think?
That sounds about right. Yeah, it's our second go-round of one from each.
And it took us 6 episodes to get to one of the big tent poles of Star Trek: The Original Series, a godlike species. I mean, you can argue these aren't godlike.
Have we not done that on the show yet?
We have. I don't think we've done that. We've had Khan. We've had the Romulans. We've had fake gods. Like, you're not a god, Kirok. You know.
that's so funny because in my mind, yeah, that's like.
That
you're right. No, it's a core tenet of TOS is who is this godlike, you know, entity putting us in a situation?
Yeah, I mean,
I should preface, these aren't technically gods they're dealing with, the Malkoshians, but they put the crew of the Enterprise, or the main crew, into a situation that is very apropos of what godlike characters
sure.
do in the show.
It's pretty like omnipotent in many ways.
For all intents and purposes, this is a god.
For all intents and purposes, yeah.
They love to do that in TOS. They're like, this counts as science fiction, I guess.
Like, if we were to break down the type of stories in TOS, like this, I would think that this takes up the lion's share of the episodes. Godlike beings putting them into a crate. In fact, I think if it's like an episode or two away from this in the run order, but we one or two episodes away from this is that episode where like there's like a godlike being and he has like the little person like doing his bidding and he has like telepathy and telekinesis and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like this happens all the time. And it got me thinking, because this episode begins, so to jump right in, season 3, Spectre of the Gun. We get a pretty typical opening for TOS, like, all right, there's a thing out there, we don't know what it is. Is it going to attack us, or is it just following us? Like, we don't know. And it got me thinking, because Kirk and the rest of the crew in this opening are kind of like on edge. They're like, what's this thing going to do? There's like a floating screw head out in space. Like, it keeps matching our every move. What's it going to do? And I'm thinking, of course they're tense. This happens every week. They have a terrifying job.
Dare I say, I think that it is a bit formulaic. I think that
it is formulaic, but I'm like, this is the first time this ever really occurred to me. I'm like, yeah, for good reason. The crew of the Enterprise should be scared shitless every day.
You know, they've seen some shit, and
Here's all it is. They've had a lot of coworkers die. I think like Star Trek TOS, for whatever reason,
is scary.
I feel like they keep going to the well of God, who puts them in an odd situation.
Yes,
I think
yes.
A lot of this has to do with like, how can we get us into a non-expensive set? Like, how can we get this space show into a set using materials we have lying around from Gunsmoke or whatever other show is being produced in the lot?
Well, and to this episode's credit, I think they do a good job of writing around that, but we'll get to that. But to get to this larger point, I'm shocked I've never thought about this before, because you're absolutely right, Mike. This is formulaic as fuck. This happens every week. As we said, this probably represents 60-70% of all the shows.
I mean, and
in
this
TOS.
This is unique to TOS, right? Like all the other iterations of Star Trek I've seen, they don't have this like, well, it's another week, another godlike entity sending us to a recreation of Earth.
I think the closest we get to that in TNG is like Q stuff.
Oh, but that's done so much.
No, exactly.
Differently.
It's
yeah.
It's different. Yeah. I do like. Oh, bless you. I do like when we get into what is it, the Q continuum, like that whole council of or whatever, you know, and then like
that is way more elaborate than just like there's a thing in space.
You're like, is that the god Apollo? I don't know.
Does feel like a crutch that they lean on a lot in these episodes. We're out of ideas.
I can't remember. We must have done another season 3 episode before, but I think season 3 is pretty rough, and I'm kind of the opinion, like, I think the show probably ended when it needed to. In fact, maybe it could have ended at season 2. Like, as cool as TOS is, as much as I like it, I do think the writers seem to have been running out of steam by this point.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's definitely amazing that it got even the two successful seasons, just considering, like, I don't know where and when TV and culture was at that time, but also of like the kind of limited options for what they could like put into that world, and we had to maybe like wait a decade or two to get into some other themes and layouts. I think about this isn't from this episode specifically, but of like TV in the 60s, what is it, the mirror episode where in the mirrorverse Uhura's character, or like Uhura's outfit, is like that scandalous little like two-piece, and you see her belly button, and in order to like film that, because that would have been like, you wouldn't have been allowed to show a belly button on TV at that time, or like it would have been a little too racy. They literally, like, on set that day, they took the censor guy, or the guy who was supposed to oversee that, out to lunch and got him like plastered. So he just and it's like, that's so fucking 60s, where you're just like, let's go get drunk at lunch so that this guy won't say no to us showing a woman's navel on TV. 60s.
But it's kind of an it does lend a little bit of unintentional charm at times to this episode, because one thing I think we might have commented on the last episode. On the last episode, we talked about Journey to Babel. We commented that they're on the ship the whole time. They don't go down to a planet. Mm-hmm. And in this episode, we get the signature Trek one color background area where it's all red.
I love this.
And I love that. It gives it like a... It's very
funny, because like I had...
maybe not unique.
Waves of feelings about it. Because my first was like, Jesus, this is low rent. And well, then,
and it is low rent. And if you look in the trivia, apparently the director was, they were asked to use false building fronts with no sides because there was no money available for a full set.
No, yeah, no shit. But
I think they do a good job of adding a Twilight Zone edge to it. They make it weird.
They do. You get a couple shots. Well, I think the thing that sells it is there's a couple shots of like, there must have been some effect used or something because it looks like, you know, there'd be like a poster or a clock that's just suspended in air where it would normally be on a wall.
Spock, evaluation.
Obviously, this represents the Melkoshian's concept of an American frontier town, circa 1880.
It's just bits and pieces. It's incomplete.
Perhaps the Melkoshians have insufficient data about this era.
Or perhaps this is all they require to complete the pattern of our death.
It's not a bad idea, and it's executed, I think, as well as it could be. And that, you know, that red thing, the just red background, my first reaction was like, oh, God, this looks so dumb. But then it does look kind of cool. Like, it does give it a kind of weird, surreal vibe.
Especially, when there's no sides to the buildings, you just see characters in the building. You're like, well, clearly they can hear them, right? But the suggestion is that they can't because there's technically, like, the suggestion is, like, they are in a building. You can see through it. There's no wall, but in reality, there is a wall there.
I think it ends up coming across as, like, watching a play.
Yeah.
Like, well, a stage play, which is where this show often is... Yeah.
TOS does tend towards stage play in a lot of ways, but that's something that I really like about TOS in general, and what I like about this episode, because it is like, you know, the like a stage play setup in the context of you're going to see a live play, like, doesn't necessarily feel surreal because of the context of, like, you know, you're buying into the context of the space, but with that same thing, like, transplanted into like a quote unquote real world of, you know, where our TOS characters are, like, it is so eerie, and like the primary colors and the bare buildings, and it's so, I love it so much, and it's so funny that it does come from a place of like, yeah, no, we don't have the money for a full building. We can get you two sides and a window, and that's, you know, that scrappiness of this.
Can I ask something that I want to see if either of you like what you thought before we get too far into this. So the episode starts with they're on the Enterprise, they're going through space, and
there's a floating screw outside.
Yes, there's a floating screw outside.
It's very colorful.
That glows and is like, hey, don't come in here. This is the super special space of me, the God thing.
Aliens. You have encroached on the space of the Melkor. You will turn back immediately. This is the only warning you will receive.
Vulcan, Captain.
English? It was Russian, sir. Every word.
No, Captain, it was Swahili.
Interesting. Telepathy.
Unquestionably.
But then their response is basically like, well, we have to go. And I don't know why. Why did they have to go? Like, was there some... They weren't responding to, like, an emergency or anything. Like, why couldn't they just be like, all right, we'll go around?
Well, I think they, in the spirit of, you know, discovery and adventure,
well,
'cause
it wasn't,
they're just
they had no idea what its intention was. The screw just kept following them. Like, it wasn't attacking them or anything.
But it does say, like, it sends a message that's don't... come here, like, this is my space.
Doesn't Kirk try to stay in the message just like, hey, we're not aggressive, just us, and we want to know
but then eventually, you know, it's like the point is, you know, they're eventually, it's clearly communicated that the alien's like, this is my space, don't come into my space, this is my bubble. And they're like, we have to go. And I don't understand why they had to, like,
don't they try to leave?
I didn't. Did I miss something that there was like some crash. They, because I don't think at the end they'd end up like doing anything.
I think they had like an appointment to talk to some people or something, right?
I don't know, man.
Our orders are very clear. We're to establish contact with the Melkotians at all costs.
True telepaths can be most formidable, Captain, and we have been warned.
What previous contacts have been made with the Melkotians?
No recorded contacts. If they ever ventured into space, they evidently withdrew immediately.
Because we need it for the episode is the long and short of it.
It was their explorers.
Yeah.
But to your point, Mike, and we mentioned this earlier, it's just like, this isn't the first time this has happened. A floaty, weird thing, and a disembodied voice spoke to them saying, "Don't come further." It's like you think, well, at some point, it's like, maybe we should turn back and just go the long way.
Yeah. You think, like, if you're on the bridge and you see the floaty thing and you start seeing Kirk talk to the floaty thing, you might just be like, Kirk, I'm going to take my 15 right now. You sort this out.
I actually feel a migraine coming on. I think I need to go to
Are you kidding?
Bay.
I would be like, I think I have some maintenance on the shuttlecraft. I'll just check the shuttlecraft.
You're just immediately jumping ship.
Where's the emergency pod again?
Wow.
Anyway, you're right. Kirk ignores this message, and they immediately... Well, no, they beam down to a planet.
Well,
they
first,
go to a planet,
they hear the... But first, I don't know if we said this. They hear the message, everyone in like their native tongue. We, the audience, hear it in English, but, you know, Chekhov heard it in Russian, and heard it in Swahili.
He spoke perfect Swahili.
And Vulcan for Spock, and etc. And then, they beam down into fog worlds.
Was I the only one who thought that when they all, so it's Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Bones, and Chekhov.
Uh-huh.
And was I the only one who thought when they're walking through this fog that it looked like the start of a rock show?
Oh yeah.
Like they were coming out onto stage like, all right, here we go. The crew
ready
of the Enterprise.
Rock.
I see that.
Again, I love this scrappy show. They're like, just a bunch of fog. That'll do.
And this is like, I think why ultimately this episode is fun is we're now with our, just characters who are really good. That's the thing with TOS is like, you could put the trappings of this episode are pretty dumb, like objectively dumb. But the characters are so fun together that this ends up being, I think, like a pretty entertaining episode because you get, our typical trio of Spock, Kirk, and Bones. But then we also have, who we don't normally have
for
on these
flavor.
Way missions, we have Chekhov and Scotty. Scotty's down there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of fun. And I know Walter Koenig has said this was his favorite episode to do, which is...
I wonder why.
I know, which is really funny, because, like, on the one hand, my first thought is like, oh, I bet that's because he has a lot to do, right? It's just a big part for
him.
Yeah,
he has a lot of making out to do.
Yeah, his part is basically just a girl making out with him.
That is seriously it. And dying.
And dying. Well, like, that's pretty fun, too.
That's fun.
Making out so much to the point where all the other characters are just like... crossing their arms like, really? You're really?
Yeah, I mean, like, they're like, this is like all an imagined world of that God being, right?
You need to be less
so they
horny.
They beam down to the planet. They walk through the fog like they're walking on stage at the rock show. They find out that their weapons, their communicators no longer work. They don't know what's going on. And then immediately, boom, the camera does that little like Batman thing. Suddenly, they're in the old West Town, and their phasers have been swapped out with six shooters.
I love the way they talk about the guns. They're like, Kirk
primitive
is,
things.
Kirk is like, ooh, a handsome weapon or something like that. And there's a funny line I do like where they're like, crude, but at a close distance, it could be almost as effective as a phaser.
Dun, dun, dun.
It's funny. I love like the stupid dress up element of I love a full on dress up episode, obviously.
But these are, well, we should point out though that like while they get the guns and everything, they're very pointedly still in their Star Trek outfits.
Well, that's what I love. They're wearing the Star Trek outfits, but with like a little like old-timey holster and gun on it, and it's so silly.
And it's kind of a cool look. I kind of like the way it looks on their outfits.
It's just, my one note really is they fun. Should have gotten spurs on the boots.
Ooh, all on their on their knee-high, you know, boots with their little capris.
You could have had that awesome, instead of just like doing the Batman spinny thing to reveal them, they could have done like the, imagine the shot. It's a low angle shot on their boots, and then the camera like rotates around and they got spurs. And then
we do like a shine on the spur.
Yeah, exactly. Bing. A little glint. A
little
on
sound
the spur.
Effect. Bing.
And also they should have given wah, wah. At least one of them a cowboy hat. I think Spock should have had a cowboy hat.
Yes, it could have. Yes, they needed the gun belts and they needed cowboy hats with their regular uniforms. And that would have completed it.
Ennio Morricone did the soundtrack and it went like,
that would have ruled. That would have ruled.
But no, they only have enough money for gun belts. Yes, that's all. Yeah. They went next door to Gunsmoke and they asked what they could borrow, and this is it.
Can you give us like five?
We can give you like
five
two
guns?
Gun belts. Yeah.
Okay.
That's all
cool.
We got.
No, we'll take them. We'll take them.
But they quickly realized, like, oh shit, we're in Tombstone, and it's the day of the shooting at the gunfight at the OK Corral, and we're the Clantons.
No,
but
we're
the Clantons
die.
Lose, Captain.
This is very another thing that's very like 60s Americana coded. Like the idea that like
we all know about
we all
the
know
OK
about
Corral
the story about the OK Corral. Like no one would know about this. Like this is not an did it like I just feel like this is like so it's the 60s and everyone is into westerns.
Everyone
you know
loves cowboy shit, including
like,
Gene
the
Roddenberry.
Way they're acting about this is like it's like some historical event that everyone like it's like they're at the Revolutionary War or something like that. Like this is not like
gotta,
a,
yeah
this doesn't seem like wonder, the kind of thing that Spock would know about, you know.
Well, this is a big thing in like American history, but like you do get
is
the
it?
Sense that like
is it a big thing in American history or is it
the
just
OK
like,
Corral yeah is if it, we're talking about the expansion of the West, sure, but I do get the sense, I think it's a fair point that this was made during the 60s where westerns were still really big on TV.
Yeah.
And you do get the sense like the, you know, the makers of Star Trek, well, we gotta bring in that Western crowd, right?
Well, you know, as if they're here, you know, they heard about, oh, there's a Western episode. Oh, you know, let's tune in. You know, and also that was exactly as much as we could get from the Paramount lot is, again, five guns. And
as we've said, we kind of talked about this, like they do a fun Twilight Zone-y explanation of this. Like perhaps the thing, the Malkoshians were reading our minds and they only had so much information to go off of. So that's why a lot of these buildings don't have walls.
Yeah, and I think they do enough with the set dressing to make this a fun idea. Like reads... They did a good job. Obviously, this comes from a place of just not having money and time, but I think they did a good job making that work.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's a good idea to only give them gun belts because you throw in that extra layer of weirdness where all the people they interact with like think they're the Clantons, and there's a point where Kirk is just like, look at our clothes, man. Feel my material, now feel yours. Have you ever seen clothes like this? Well, sure, on the Clantons. Yeah.
I know, it's you know, just like the...
All that stuff is great.
Take a close look at me. Yeah? Who do you think I am? Ike Clanton? Who do you think you are? Well, I know this is hard to understand, but I'm Captain James T. Kirk of the spaceship Enterprise. These men are part of my crew. We're not really here. We're from the future. We haven't been born yet. Feel the material in my shirt. Now feel the material in your own shirt. Do you notice any difference? No. Do these clothes look like yours?
Not exactly.
Have you ever seen clothes like this before?
Sure.
Where?
On the Clantons. You Clantons are always great with your jokes. That's why we like you.
I'm not joking.
Only difference between you and the Earps is that they never joke.
I'm not joking. I'm not Ike Clanton.
It's okay with me, Ike. Anything you say don't make no difference who I think you are. Your problem is, who does Wyatt Earp think you are?
I'm a sucker for Twilight Zone plot elements in sci-fi stories. So I enjoyed this stuff. I think they're making the best out of what they got. And it's kind of a fun episode because this essentially becomes, spoiler alert, this is basically the plot of Nightmare on Elm Street. Eventually, they come to the conclusion, yeah. if we're skipping to the head, none of this is real.
Freddy
it's only
no
real because we
here.
Make it real.
Yeah. We just, yeah, this is a little weak, I feel like, but they basically end up just like, through force of will, we can survive the
through
gunfight.
Through force of Vulcan Spock
powers.
Assisted, yeah, mind
but
meld.
What I do really like is the way that, so they understand they're in the OK Corral. And as we all know, the story of the OK Corral, definitely. The clan,
as portrayed in the hit film Tombstone.
Yes. They're all going to get killed. Basically, they're the Clantons, and they're about to get killed by the Earp brothers. And it's like they kind of transport in the climactic, you know, hours. It's like basically that evening, yeah. 5 o'clock. You know, they're like 5 o'clock, 5:01. You'll be dead. You know,
the show. We should say the show gets surprisingly brutal at times with the suggestions. Like the Earps are like,
oh yeah,
if we're gonna kill you if you draw on us or not. And also Doc Holliday even more pointedly says like, there's gonna be a hole in your head from my gun. I'm like, whoa.
Well, I love the arc of this though, where. So they know they're in this situation and they're like, okay, well, let's, it's basically them trying to avoid the fight, but it is unavoidable. Like they all try to, in their own ways, like diffuse the tensions. Like maybe we can get the Earps to understand, like, we don't care. We're just like, we're not the Clantons. We don't, you know,
it's just misunderstanding. My name's Jim Kerr.
They all end up making it way worse. Like they end up pissing off the Earp brothers so much.
There's a really funny exchange that Kirk has towards the end of the episode with the sheriff. Like he does that like hysterical person thing where you grab onto the person's shoulders. I'm telling you, I can't kill this man. The sheriff's like, you gotta kill him.
Never thought I'd see the day the Claytons got Yeller.
Shatner loves a grabbing someone by the shirt and shaking them. Moment.
You don't understand. I'm not a Clayton.
And this, you know, this whole thing, there's a bit in this episode that I did have a problem with. Overall, I enjoyed this episode. I thought it was fun. Probably in the grand scheme of season three episodes, this is probably one of the better entries in this season, I would say, because there's a lot of crap in season three.
Yeah.
But one thing about this episode that I thought was strange, they clearly know they are not in a real place. They can see that they're clearly in some fantasy concoction by the Malkoshians.
They know that there are like illusions afoot.
Yes. So it begs the question, why then are they so hell-bent on preserving the timeline of the Tombstone event, the OK Corral? It's like, we can't change things. It's like, what are you talking about? Preserving history? This is clearly not real.
Preserving history. Because they see
David, it's definitely that they're like, we literally cannot change. Like, yeah, like they're like, we want to, but we can't.
Because they try to,
but
like,
they don't get to that conclusion until the end of the episode.
No, they
don't. Do they?
Because they try to like leave the town, and there's a force field they can't leave. At one point, Kirk is like, okay, so we just won't show up to like the thing, and then they're magically like zapped over to the place. Because yeah, they're told of like, you know, that you can't change this, but. That's when the reveal happens of Spock saying like, wait, if Chekhov is supposed to be like, you know, fucking bumfuck dude, he doesn't die before he doesn't die in the storyline, but Chekhov is quote unquote like dead. Well, they believe him to sort of be dead at this point, but he's not, because guess what? You can change shit because this is all,
well,
you know,
this, yeah.
made up.
They come to this conclusion because at a certain point they're like, well, wait a minute. We can make some knockout gas, like a tranquilizer. And they use some stuff from Doc Holliday's.
They use like pure ethanol and cocaine,
yeah.
I assume.
They basically, and this comes to a point. I was surprised. So there's a lot of GIFs that come from Star Trek TOS.
Uh-huh.
I'm surprised this isn't a more popular GIF of Scotty breathing in the smoke.
Oh man, it's like the most like hit off the bong coated thing ever.
He's huffing. He's huffing.
Nothing happens. And Spock is just.
What
like,
do you think that
fuck?
Was? What do you think that was? That he would like he was actually breathing in.
Probably some like. Dry ice.
Asbestos.
Yeah, but yeah.
Dry ice.
Yeah. But they immediately come to this conclusion. Well, Spock is just like, that should have worked, Captain. What the hell? I mean, I know Scotty's been drinking like incessantly for the last 5 hours. Oh, yeah, and he's probably immune to everything.
That's a funny like bit we didn't mention is like they have real alcohol there, which is something they, I guess they don't nor. I thought in TOS they still were drinking real alcohol, but.
I think they can get there. They're always drinking like some fucked up
Synthahol brand. Yeah.
And Synthahol gets you drunk, right? It's just...
It simulates the effects, I think they say.
Isn't the thing that Synthahol, like, it's just sort of like what we would all like alcohol to be. Like, it gets you drunk, but only... It doesn't get you sad or mad drunk, and it doesn't give you a hangover, and it doesn't have any, like, bad effects
on you. I think the idea is it's like alcohol, but without the literally poisonous effects of drinking alcohol.
And I get the sense, too, just the way people act about it. It probably is... gets you less drunk. Like, it's lower ABV than real alcohol.
It's just not the real thing, baby.
There's a great line that McCoy says when Scotty's like, yeah, this stuff's pretty good. The booze is real. And then McCoy's just like, I hate to think what it's doing to your stomach, Lannin.
You know? Well, I thought that line, the little exchange was kind of funny because it's like one of those like things like in the future, they're like, you know, one of those just things you think about everyday life, you take for granted, and someone in the future just being like, Jesus, you know how bad that is for you? Like, don't put that in your body, goddamn. Like, enough.
Captain, they had some Taco Bell. You should try it. It's delicious.
Don't eat that. God, you know what that is? Yeah, it's the same. Yeah, it's like that.
It's poison.
The same kind of joke.
Mm-hmm.
Dear God, man.
But immediately Spock is just like, that should have worked. I've now come to the only conclusion there is. None of this shit is real. And we probably should have thought about that when we saw the floating clock in space.
I mean, it's, you know, it's future times. They've seen weird shit before. They're like, oh, this is all an illusion. And
Captain, if I remember my ancient cinema history, there was a film called Nightmare on Elm Street where the where the heroes defeat the villain by proclaiming none of this is real.
That could work for us.
Which is basically what happens. They're like, Spock, mind meld with us and just tell us that this shit ain't real.
Mind meld with us so we don't get scared.
Spock is like, in my Earth studies, I remember Freddy versus Jason.
It was a favorite of my mother's.
I saw it in the same class I learned about Tombstone.
Wait a minute. Wyatt Earp died by fire. Virgil Earp by water. Yeah. How can we use that?
How can we use that?
So he mind melds with everybody. The bullets aren't real. They end up, the herbs shoot at him. Nothing happens. And this is when Kirk finally gets to do a little bit of play fighting. Mm-hmm. He does like his classic hammer punch, his Kirk hammer punch.
I love.
And there's a moment where he's about to draw his gun. He puts it in Wyatt Earp's face and he doesn't pull the trigger.
Wait, did you skip over his drop kick?
Of course, the drop kick. That's what starts this whole fight off.
Kirk's opening move is to run up to this guy and fully drop kick. It's one of those things. It reminds me of like a wrestling, professional wrestling move. I'm just thinking like you've hurt yourself way more than the other guy doing. Like because Kirk does the drop kick and just falls onto the ground
that's
horizontally.
How gravity works. He's just like, yep, I'm going for it.
Well, and this is kind of another, we mentioned that they lean on this crutch of God beings a lot. They're just doing the end of Arena again, the Gorn episode. Mm-hmm. No, I will not kill him. You know what I mean? I'm surprised he didn't yell that into the air. It's the exact same beat.
I kind of like that, though. Like it,
yeah, the pacifist.
This aspect of this doesn't read as pulling from the same well again so much as its consistency with his character, right?
No,
like
this
commitment
to
non-violence. I actually kind of like I think it's one of the cool things about the show, you know?
Yeah.
But you got to admit, it's the exact same ending of the Arena episode. Mm-hmm. And then the Mercotians come again, like, you did not kill. Why? We're peaceful. Okay, you can pass. And again, that's okay. I mean, it's not, it's a fine conclusion, but it is the exact same conclusion to that Gorn episode. I'm just saying.
Damage reported in?
No damage, sir. All decks report fully operational.
Captain Kirk, you did not kill. Is this the way of your kind?
It is. We fight only when there's no choice. We prefer the ways of peaceful contact. I speak for a vast alliance of fellow creatures who believe in the same thing. We have sought you out to join us. Our mission is still one of peace.
Approach our planet and be welcome. A delegation will come out to meet you. Our warning threats are over.
Excellent.
It's not quite that, like, you can pass, is it? Or is it more?
Yes, it is. Like, we go through, we will no longer threaten you.
Why does the ship blow? Why does that little spaceship blow up at the end?
That is odd.
Because to me, like, part of it, so the thing that's been talking to them this whole time, the thing that they find in space, it wasn't the actual aliens. It was like a probe, basically, that was communicating with the god. Like, we never see, you know, what the Malkoshians are, what they look like.
No, we do. They basically are snake puppet heads.
What?
That's what that thing
was.
How
did I miss this?
You saw it. It's a big old stupid, we're back on the ship, and then you see in space, it's like a big little paper mache looking
like a Muppet.
It was very stupid.
Maybe I blocked this
out.
It
was really stupid. Yeah,
you,
man.
You did
I
not
mean,
kill? Like, no, we left that ship behind a long time ago.
Kind of,
but did they?
Like, it almost reads as like a bit of like they beat their puzzle and it's like, does not compute. And then the ship blows up or something.
But, well, they're getting ready to fire on it at a certain point because Spock's like, hey, there's like an energy buildup, Captain. What? Lock phasers. And then the thing blows up. They're like, okay,
oh,
this
okay.
is fine.
Never
I
mind.
Guess it was just building up energy to blow itself
okay,
up.
Okay, bye.
But there's a fun line. There's a fun exchange here where after they go through and all's well, cancel red alert, Spock's like, so Captain, back there on the fantasy tombstone planet, you were wanting to kill those Earp
guys. Oh, yeah,
guys.
You wanted to kill.
You wanted to kill, but I didn't. Yeah, I know, but
you did.
At a certain point, you wanted to. Like, well, it's okay, Spock, because we left that star killing instinct behind centuries ago. It's like, did you?
Captain, may I ask a question? You needn't answer if it seems too personal. I'm sure I'll be able to give you an answer, Mr. Spock. This afternoon, you wanted to kill, didn't you? But he didn't kill, Mr. Spock. But he wanted to, Doctor.
Is that the way it seemed to you, Mr. Spock?
Yes, Captain.
Mr. Spock, you're absolutely right. That's exactly the way it was.
Mankind ready to kill.
That's the way it was in 1881.
I wonder how humanity managed to survive.
We overcame our instinct for violence.
And like, this is kind of an interesting question that the episode poses at the end. It's like, is that something that humans could ever truly get over? It's always there.
Or is it only this aspirational thing?
Well, and I think you see it. I think as silly as Kirk is, I do think, or as silly as Shatner plays Kirk, like, it's also great. It is.
Yeah.
And I think the turn comes when Chekhov is killed. Like, once Chekhov's killed, then I think Kirk goes, I think his personality does change. And I think that's when he gets like, he does want to kill them because he's killed. They've killed one of his crew, you know?
Yeah, I think.
But, you know, Chekhov didn't die. He was alive, and Chekhov will return in Doomsday.
Chekhov will return to make out with a hottie.
Not if I have anything to say about it, crew.
I know at a certain point this joke is going to get old, but I can't stop saying right now, the blank will return in Doomsday.
Well, it's the new at least as of this recording, it's the new
somehow
Palpatine has returned.
Somehow Palpatine has returned. Somehow Chekhov has returned. No, but that's I love that about
the Malkoshians will return.
Oh my god. I love the character Captain James T. Kirk because of, like, you know, moments like that of, like, he does want to kill or do violence, but he won't because of his, you know, like, he has these very high emotions, as we, you know, see with, as portrayed by William Shatner, but, like, he is the captain and he has to, like, keep it keep it together and not, you know, violate a moral code or not.
Yeah, maybe, like, to your point, things. Dave, maybe it's like not that humans get rid of that feeling, but that we can learn to not act on it.
Unless you're a crooked admiral, like in every other episode of The Next Generation.
In which case, I will double fist punch you.
Yes, and drop kick
your ass.
The Federation is a utopia, except for anyone in it who has to interact with Kirk.
Yes.
And they are evil.
Any of the admirals. The admirals basically are almost like always bad.
Evil Warhawk generals from like the 40s military.
Yeah, and that's why Star Trek is great.
Somehow the military-industrial complex has returned.
Has returned.
The military-industrial complex will return in Doomsday. Do we talk about the, like, Chekhov's whole thing, though, on this planet? Like, that basically the girl is... we mentioned it in passing.
Because I knew that this episode ultimately, because I've seen TOS before, and I knew the episode was ultimately going to be like, I will not kill him, and then they're allowed to pass. But I couldn't remember if this led to anything of like, if this was another sort of a test that the Malkoshians were doing, like, let's see how they interact with love, you know, or something like that. But it literally has no payoff.
No,
nothing.
It's just titillating. It's just,
It's funny. It reminds me, I know Chekhov, like, the whole thing is they added him for the sex appeal and the youth because he kind of looks like Davy Jones, which is so funny to me because, like, I'm sorry, Walter Koenig. I don't think Walter Koenig's ever going to listen to this.
That's a weird little man in a wig.
I think he's the least attractive man of, like, all the people that we have.
Absolutely.
Between Kirk, Spock, Bones, and Scotty, I think I'd put Chekhov at the bottom of that tier list. Is
told you, this is because I wear a hairpiece, isn't it?
Kinda.
He has a stupid
that's a lot
wig
of it.
And I'm sorry, but a weird face. Like,
yeah, you do. Knowing that his character was put in there just to get like a younger audience, like, it really does shine a light on this subplot. Well, it's not even really a subplot. It's just like Kirk, as they're there, there's like this woman that's like in love with Chekhov's
his
character
Billy. She's like, oh my God, I thought I'd never see you again. And just like sucking
face. It's just
face.
Them making out. And at a certain point, there's like a turn where you think this is going to turn into some kind of story with them. Like, I can't stay here with you, you know, or she wants him to run away with her or something.
Yeah, she's like, you can marry me. And he's just like, oh, no, I couldn't. No.
But you're a fantasy by a snake suck puppy. It. I can't.
And then he dies.
It's just, it doesn't go anywhere, and it really does. It is just a thing. Like, this whole character's whole existence is just to appeal to a young audience. That's it.
Yeah, a little bit insulting. So. What do young girls want? Or, I don't know. You could pretend to be this lady that's kissing this gross man.
Anywho. So this is This is Spectre of the Gun, and as I said, you know, it's got some issues with it, but overall, I enjoyed it. What about you guys? Would you recommend? I would.
I liked it overall.
It wouldn't be in my top 10 Trek. No. But just in general, I would recommend it.
Yeah, no, same. I think I'd give it a soft recommend. I think if you're looking for like old Western shenanigans, it's, you know, you can't do much better than I think they make. It's uneven for sure. I think that I think this is probably as best as we're gonna get from season three.
Yeah.
And it does feel like they're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel, but maybe they're coming up with some good stuff.
Well, when you have to be scrappy about things, like, is where you can create some really good and interesting art, and you can create some just okay whatever
this is one, because I know, you know, the show back in the day, maybe everyone wasn't watching this one in color. This is one I feel like you would have to watch it in color. Like, this in black and white would probably not look good.
You wouldn't get that pure red in the back. I did think it's funny. There were some shots in the back where they made some kind of like perspective models of like mountains in the background to make it seem like they were far away. But as the lightning was striking, you could see like the shadow on the back of the set, you know, and you're just, oh.
That's great. I love that shit.
They tried. Oh.
I'll take that over, what is it, the CGI like orb that they film all the Star Wars TV shows in. What is it, like the Vision,
the volume,
The volume. Yeah. Mm. I'll take a just red ass background over the volume any day. Yeah, the parking lot in Atlanta. Give me a red background and a plywood, tiny model.
Well, thus concludes another trip around the sector in the TOS era, guys. This has been, what's going on here? We're going past warp 8? What's 8.1? 8.2? What's happening to us? Chad, what's going on? What's happening with the simulator? What's with these giant floating? There's these giant floating faces of our faces in front of us. There's a whale. What the fuck is going on?
Derby Whale Movies here.
To be continued.